Another year has passed. What are emerging general aviation safety trends? I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature, and thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Bruce Landsberg of AOPA's Air Safety Foundation, and we're here to talk about a number of things. We're on the eve of the release of another NAAL report, which is a terrific summary of what we can learn from accidents. And for some people, I guess, Bruce, this sounds a little morbid, but we have to pay attention to what has happened in the past if we're to learn from these bits of history.
First, Paul, thank you very much for having me back. The statement has been that we are the only species that theoretically can learn from history and yet consistently refuses to do so. And obviously the people who are reading the NAAL report and participating in Air Safety Foundation programs and online courses, we think are probably not the source of the problem. But in any event, we try to get the word out and say, learn as much as you can about what happened. Some of the accidents truly are accidents, and some of them you literally have to wonder what the pilot was thinking.
Well, now, let's start by clearing up what, for I think some people, is a little bit of confusion about the NAAL report and the period it covers. The NAAL report that's going to be released here shortly is for accidents that happened in the year 2007.
The latest one will be, yes, that is correct, for 2007.
And is that based primarily on the fact that it's usually about a year before the NTSB issues a final cause report?
That's correct. As you know, some people say it's never too early to speculate. We think that there are times when it's too early to speculate. And because this document gets such wide distribution and because people are using it to make decisions, we have chosen to say we will not finalize the NAAL until we have 80% final reports on accidents. And then we've gone back because a few folks have challenged us and said, why do you do that? You should wait till you have 100%. So we've gone back in years past to say we've made percentage predictions based on whatever was happening. And our forecasts have been within a couple of percentage points. So we feel vindicated in saying rather than waiting too long, we're going to get this out.
All right. What are some things that pop out at you from the report that's upcoming? And I don't expect you to give away anything that isn't ready for publication yet, but are there any trends we're seeing in the upcoming report that are popping out as something you haven't seen before?
Well, I don't know if they're trends, but they are numbers, and we thought we'd give you a few of them. In the total number of general aviation accidents in 2007 was about 6% higher than it was in 2006. Now, that's the second lowest number that we've had over the last 10 years. So, if you'll pardon the pun, the sky isn't falling, mm-hmm. but it's an area of interest. The area we pay a lot of attention to is fatal accidents, and the total number of fatal accidents, fortunately, was down about 5.5% from the previous year. Now, what's interesting is that the amount of flight time in 2007 did not change very much mm-hmm. in 2006, and everybody wants to know what's the rate. Well, my usual disclaimer is that's kind of a squishy number, but we're getting far better information from the FAA in their new General Aviation Activity Survey than we've gotten in years past. And we think that the rate is actually down. In other words, the flight hours are staying, in 2007, were relatively flat.
Right.
That won't happen in 2008.
Right.
We can say that with some degree of assurance.
Well, now, this brings up the issue of will we be as good a pilots if high fuel prices that happened during the middle of the year keep us from flying as much? And I think you've addressed this recently in your blog.
I did. And I think it depends question. And it depends on the pilot's judgment, background, skill, experience, and risk tolerance, which, of course, is pretty much the same as it always has been.
Mm-hmm.
I went out on a limb and said, my guess is that we will have more problems in the physical skill area, which is the takeoff and landings mostly, which are dependent upon the physical skill and the more repetitive practice. And that will tend generally to affect the lower time pilots because the performance grooves aren't worn as deeply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in fact, you mentioned that, if I recall correctly, that something I hadn't really thought about, and that is that it might take longer, a little longer to get rusty if you have, 5,000 hours than if you have 200 hours.
Well, that's based on a personal observation, as I put in the blog. When I started flying, if I went much longer than a week and a half to 2 weeks, I was really approaching the airplane with great trepidation. And, of course, winds over 10 knots were something to be very cautious about. Now, after having either ridden through or actually executed a number of thousands of landings myself, I can not touch an airplane for a while and still generally get things worked out pretty well on landings. As I said, the other things that I have not done as much of, instrument approaches and so on, I'm still going to approach with a great deal of caution.
All right, let's, when we come back from our break, let's pick out a few things in particular to talk about that you think will be stories that we need to watch when these statistics come to light. My guest is Bruce Landsberg, Executive Director of the AOPA Air Safety Foundation. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from AeroNews.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
Diamond's DA-42 Twin Star is General Aviation's ultimate flying machine. Fly fast with the confidence of a twin for the cost of a single. Go direct over water or rugged terrain and cover great distances in the first and only piston aircraft with an advanced airframe, avionics, and engines. The DA-42 gives you options you've never had before, including the Garmin G1000 and known ice protection. Go where you want, when you want, fast and for less. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bruce Landsberg of AOPA's Air Safety Foundation. And we're talking about some observations Bruce is making somewhat related to the upcoming release of the annual NAAL report on general aviation safety. Bruce, you mentioned a couple of things before we started talking on the record here and that you wanted to talk about. One you mentioned in particular that kind of jumped out at me as something I hadn't really heard much about was CTAF overcrowding. What are we seeing here?
That's an area that kind of struck me as I was flying into the Frederick area here not too long ago. Actually, it was last summer. And the frequency was just absolutely jammed up. And I got to thinking, we're fortunate here in that we share our frequency with just one other airport. So we're in pretty good shape, but we had a lot of traffic that day. And I decided to just see how prone this was to, in other airports, and got quite a number of comments from pilots saying that in some cases their CTAFs were almost unusable. We've had a number of accidents, whether you could attribute it directly to CTAF congestion or whatever. I think we would all agree that it's nice to be able to hear what's going on and be able to make your position reports accordingly. And a lot of people complain about it, but they don't do anything about it. And we decided that it might be a good idea to give people a way to show them how to get a new frequency for your CTAF. So that's what we did.
Well, there are only so many potential CTAF frequencies available. I know that when I was learning to fly, I was at a little airport that was on 122.9, and I think there were five or six other airports I could hear when I was in the pattern. To what extent is this a matter of not enough frequencies, and to what extent is it maybe a matter of communications techniques that are not as efficient in using the time?
I think, as in all cases, Paul, it's a number of things, but there are more frequencies available than you might think. And it was also my observation when we got the frequency here at Frederick change, just because it had to change. I believe we were on 122.8 when we did it. And there was some reluctance from people saying, well, there are going to be a lot of pilots who fly in who aren't going to know the frequencies. Well, okay, we'll get through that. It made a huge difference. I would say 95% of the time, in that when you hear somebody on the frequency, you know that it has to do with this airport. I think it just has to do with inertia, and a lot of people complain about the frequencies. There are more frequencies available than you might think, and particularly with 720 channel radios now, that's why we went to that kind of setup.
All right. Do you think that we're going to wind up on the splitting the channels in three again, and because they've talked about these new 8.3 kilohertz wide channels that I think essentially would obsolete a whole lot of radios.
That's a situation that I don't feel qualified to comment on. I know in Europe they've had the 8.3 megahertz split, but I think in this country, at least so far, we're doing okay in most cases. The other thing that's interesting, when we talk about capacity, I'll go off slightly off topic here, but and we talk about the airline capacity and so on, mm-hmm. The overall number of traffic is down considerably over where it was several years ago, and I think it's going to take it a while to come back. So all of these concerns about, well, you know, that we're going to be bulging on capacity, it's going to take us a little longer to get to the critical point.
All right, let's talk about backup flight instruments for a moment, because you wouldn't have mentioned that unless there was some indication that it was playing a role in what we're seeing in the aviation safety record.
Well, the thing that is interesting is, as you know, glass has become the absolute new wave of everything. You almost can't buy an airplane today that isn't largely or completely glass equipped. And you've heard the old joke about nothing can go wrong, go wrong, go wrong.
Right.
type of circumstance. The NTSB got very interested with the fact that there were some massive display failures on the ultimate glass airplane, which is the Airbus. And in fact, they had 49 failures on Airbus 319 and 320 where there was significant failure, and there were 7 incidents where all 6 screens on board the Airbus failed simultaneously.
Right.
So as our airplanes aren't built to nearly the standard that a Part 25 airline aircraft is, and yet we're saying, well, we've got lots of redundancy here. And when I put that one up on the blog, I got quite a number of responses from people who had flown in glass and said, yeah, we were told this couldn't happen, and guess what? It did.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, even though they were on the backup screen, they're full of total electrical aircraft, they had something like 20 minutes to get the thing on the ground before they lost everything. So I think it's, as we move into the brave new world, it behooves us to be paying some pretty close attention to what the realities are of our systems.
All right, let's talk about amateur-built aircraft, and I think this is going to be a touchy one. I'm going to be talking with Tom Poberesny tomorrow on the special feature. But you have noticed an uptick in the numbers being used to compile the forthcoming null report in accidents involving amateur-built aircraft, and a particular segment of that market in particular.
I'm gonna read you the quote from our database manager who is looking at this. He says the proportion of all GA accidents and fatal accidents that involve amateur-built aircraft continue to increase. Now, get this. These increases are not explained by similar increases in the estimated number of aircraft active, or flight time logged. So it would appear, as best we can tell, that there is a real increase in this, and it isn't explained just by the fact that there are more amateur-built aircraft flying. And one of my duties is working with the FAA on one of their safety committees, and we look at all of the accidents in general aviation. And one aircraft in particular, it's no secret, has stood out, and I think this is, I wrote about this in the blog, and we had quite a discussion on it, is the amateur-built Lancairs.
Mm-hmm.
And those are beautiful, fast, capable airplanes. But I think they're also deserving of people's respect. And one of the things that we saw is the profile of those accidents. A lot of traffic pattern stall spin type of scenarios, which is unusual for a cross-country airplane.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a very interesting response back on the blog. There were some people who said, well, you know, the airplane's perfectly fine if you fly it right. And there were others, including some very high-time Lancair pilots, who said, yes, and you better fly it right, because it's not, shall we say, forgiving when you get into the high angle of attack or low airspeed environments.
Yeah, there was one very recent accident involving one of those planes in which the pilot apparently had just purchased it. And I wonder if a rise in the rate in that aircraft, or the number of accidents reported in that aircraft, may not have something to do with the fact that some of them are coming on the used market now. I would think that the original builder might have a better appreciation for the particular traps that could be represented by that design more than somebody who bought it, you know, used off Barnstormers.
I think that's certainly possible. The manufacturer was even responded to the blog and said that they were hoping to encourage pilots to get more training, and I think the FAA would be in wholehearted agreement with that. Now, where they're going with it, I think is too soon to tell. But I would just say for your listeners, if you're flying a Lancair amateur built airplane, or if you know of somebody or you're offered a ride in one, be careful, because the airplanes themselves, as I say, we're not talking about construction problems, but we are talking about these are very high-performance airplanes, and they do have to be flown with a great deal of respect.
Well, Bruce, when will the NAAL report be released?
I was afraid you're going to ask me that question. We anticipate, I would say sometime in late February, maybe early March, we'll have it out. And not to worry, we will be letting everybody know as soon as it's available, and it'll be up online and open to everybody.
Well, Bruce, as always, we really appreciate not only the NAAL report, but all the other work you do. And I appreciate your blog. And at some point, I'd like to talk more about some of the specific topics you've covered in it. For our listeners who haven't found it yet, you can go to asf.org and look for the Air Safety e-Journal. And Bruce, thanks so much for taking a few minutes out for our listeners today.
Well, Paul, thank you, and we wish safe flights to everyone.
Bruce Landsberg is the Executive Director of the AOPA Air Safety Foundation, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.